All opinions expressed by Davidson Capital Management on MoneyWise are solely theirs and are based upon information they consider reliable and is subject to change without notice. You should be aware of the risk in investing in any security or investment strategy discussed on the show. Before acting, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and should seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. Got your MoneyWise guys back inside the MoneyWise studio with me for this weekend show. I have my brother Jeff, Joe Rust, and I am your host, Kyle Davidson. For any new listeners to the MoneyWise program, Davidson Capital Management is a fee-only registered investment advisor. We're in our 35th year of business, and with offices in San Antonio and Corpus Christi, we have your investment management needs covered throughout Central and South Texas. And if you'd like to learn more about us, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your MoneyWise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you could subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps, where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. Well, as we kick off every weekend's MoneyWise program, I turn it over to my brother Jeff to go into the numbers from Wall Street from this past week. So, Jeff, take it away.
Okay, in the week just past, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down about 903 points, or 2.3%. The S&P 500 last week was down about 50 points, or 1%. And the NASDAQ last week was down about 131 points, or 0.8%. Now, for the year-to-date, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 3.2%. The S&P 500 year-to-date is up 9.1%. And the NASDAQ year-to-date is up 8.2%.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm going to summarize this past week with a saying that we have used on this program many, many times over our 19 years of doing the MoneyWise program. And I know Dad, I think, was maybe the first person to use it on the show, but words have consequences. And we learned that firsthand, or reminded once again, unfortunately, a Fed governor possibly didn't understand that words have consequences. And I'm talking to you, Neil Kashkari. On Thursday, opened his mouth during market hours, and he said the one sentence, "We may not need to cut rates at all this year." Thanks, Neil.
I'll have to say, when I heard Kyle growl down the hall, I knew it had something had to do with the Fed. It's either him or Ballard or somebody. And I'm like, what happened? Did somebody try to break into our office? And of course, it was Fed speak and another Fed, ex-Fed governor making a comment that quickly made the market capitulate and be down 1% for the day.
Well, I mean, just a complete reversal. I mean, we were approaching a 1% gain for the day. And as we get about an hour, maybe an hour and a half out or so from the market close, this one sentence was said by Neil Kashkari that the Fed might not need to cut interest rates at all this year. And the market went complete reversal and then some. And you could see how fast the algorithms, you can see how fast the program trading can take the market down.
Could it be any surprise that the market was really primed to want to have a little pullback after the incredible first quarter that we had?
Sure. And we've talked about it on the show.
And so anything said that's outside of
consensus.
What has been the message from the chairman of the Federal Reserve was they're talking about 3 rate cuts this year. And the market has gotten used. Remember we started the year at 6. We thought that was crazy. And then the Federal Reserve governor put the chopper on that, and now it's down to 3. The markets didn't fall out of bed. I think I talked about it a few shows ago. I'm a little surprised the markets didn't fall out of bed, getting the expectations chopped. And now we got someone talking about no expectations at all. So it's no surprise that you'd have the machines pick up on those words and Shazam, one of Dad's other favorite terms, Shazam, you got a 600-point down afternoon. And really, it happened, what, about an hour, hour and a half, really? Because I remember Thursday opening
before the
up,
close.
Because we'd had, I think, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday were negative. And I think Thursday started up positive. And then I was out at an outside meeting, and all of a sudden I pulled up my phone, and I said, I saw minus 600, and I think I called you.
You called me.
You,
like,
and
what happened?
And you told me what happened. It's like, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. So next
Fed
week,
governor strikes.
So the Fed speak, and I'm Dad. I can hear Dad now just pounding my head saying, you're talking too much about the Fed. But that, again, that's what is driving the markets at the moment. Mm-hmm. And so all the Fed speakers this week, all of their words were parsed. I think there was another one that came out on Friday. It actually talked about a rate increase. And I don't remember who that person was, and I'm not sure.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, there was someone talking about actually might have a rate increase this year. She must not have been a
voting member,
because the markets didn't react to that at all. But next week, yeah, there was. I think another thing. The reason why Thursday was the way it was is I think there were folks getting in position for the Friday unemployment number, wondering if it was going to be much stronger than expected, and then there was going to be even more talk about fewer interest rate cuts this year, and maybe more folks talking about no interest rate cuts in 2024. The number was a little stronger than expected, but the market seemed to shrug it off. Now, next week, we got the big ones. We got consumer prices on Wednesday, and we got producer prices on Thursday. So if those come out hotter, because some of the Fed governors have been talking about how January and February's inflation numbers were disappointing. And so if you get another quote-unquote disappointing inflation number, meaning hotter than expected, then the talk is going to increase about whether there's going, whether we're going to go from 3 to 2 to 1 to 0. Yeah, Kyle, go ahead.
Well, it was the Federal Reserve Governor Michelle Bowman on Friday who said that, you know, she's still thinking that they're going to be cutting, but one of her quotes said that she repeated that rate hikes cannot be fully ruled out. That's what she said. And like you said, the market didn't pick up on it, or at least the algorithms didn't pick up on it. But something else, you know, interesting, and I know we're coming up on our first commercial break, so I'm going to have to carry this over, because I know, you know, we talked about the Fed, but we can talk about what caused the market to kind of pull back on Monday and Tuesday. And it had all to do with interest rates. So we'll pick this up on the other side. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Your Money Wise guys will be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll-free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps, where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So if you're just tuning into this weekend's MoneyWise program, we'll start off with an apology to Dad, because we had to jump right into the Fed speak in the first segment of the show. But unfortunately, the Federal Reserve and the things that the Fed governors say, words have consequences. We learned that very apparent. It was very apparent on Thursday when Neel Kashkari made the comment that we might not see any interest rate cuts this year, and it caused the market to do a 600-point-plus reversal in the Dow. But earlier in the week, and this was the point I was making before we went to our first segment break, is that we saw, you know, it was either last week's show or the week before, I'd pulled up a statistic dating back to the 1950s that the majority of the 10% plus corrective moves the market has seen since the 50s, majority of the time it was driven by higher interest rates. Well, having Monday and Tuesday being down days, what do we see, gentlemen? Higher interest rates that pushed stocks lower. And as Jeff said very, very succinctly in the first segment, is that we have had this four-month run. We've been talking on the MoneyWise program that we are due for some type of pullback. And even from our investment strategy standpoint, we are waiting with bated breath for some type of substantive correction to where we can rebalance and get greater stock exposure in our individual names and increase our allocations to stocks across all of our asset allocation models, but after this corrective move. So what do we see Monday and Tuesday? Higher interest rates, market move lower, recovered on Wednesday. Things were looking great on Thursday. Neil Kashkari, open mouth, insert foot. Market falls out of bed, and then Friday we had some recovery, even with, as Jeff had mentioned in the last segment, a little bit hotter employment data. And I think what the market keyed on Friday with the hotter jobs numbers is that the average hourly earnings, it was up 0.3%, but the expectation was up 0.4%. Well, and I think maybe that's what the market held on to. Yeah, Joe.
I think you're looking at everything and all the news and the Fed speak, and you look at the economic numbers. The one thing that I've just, especially the last 3 to 5 years, I'm like, you know what? Handicapping the Fed is pretty ding dang hard. You know what I mean? And it's really hard to say here. Like Bullard this morning, who I know Kyle sometimes has praised his name.
He's not a Fed governor anymore at all. He's a professor, but yes.
Know. He came out this morning and said, hey, I think the Fed's rate is too high. I think they need to lower it. So you have him who's normally.
Really?
Yes, yes.
The most, who is always the most bearish, the most hawkish when he was a governor. Now that he's in the private sector, he can just all of a sudden turn dovish. And then like Jeff said, this Michelle Bowman on Friday saying we could see potentially, we can't rule out a rate increase. Luckily, the market didn't key in on that to see another sell down on Friday.
And the other thing is maybe there's a little bit of a tilt where good news is good news. Because we always talk about good news being bad news, maybe with the employment numbers. You know, good news on the employment numbers mean the economy is pretty strong. And I don't know. Maybe that's the back of traders' minds, too.
But. Actually, Joe, you bring up a good point because I think all of our listeners, because as we call it, the perversion of the market, where sometimes bad news is good for the market and sometimes good news is bad for the market. And it constantly is shifting and changing. I think this is, again, the reason why active asset management is so critical, because we have so many different flip-flops during any given market year, where bad news is good and good news is bad. And so, like you said, Joe, we had a very strong employment report, 303,000 jobs created. Expectations were for 200,000. We're seeing average monthly employment gains of 231,000. We saw the unemployment rate tick down to 3.8. And so the old saying is, as goes the economy, so goes the market. So if we're looking at possibly 2.5% GDP growth, that really is positive for the stock market. But again, the stock market is so much on a hot tin roof, depending upon when and by how many the Fed is going to cut rates. And so that's why these Fed governors can push and pull the market around. I even said to Joe, Jeff, I said, I wonder if Neil Kashkari has an offshore account. Now, this is just, of course, tongue in cheek, has an offshore account shorted the S&P. And then made this comment.
Well,
how
about that other governor that used to be hawkish that's now in the private sector and is a little more dovish? Is he working for a firm that's, you know, 90% invested in stocks right now? And they got dinged a little bit on Thursday with the market down 600. I mean, there's a lot. there's folks out there talking about how, you know, the Fed needs to be taking action now because in terms of lowering interest rates, because there's trouble on the horizon, whatever it is that they're looking at that demonstrates that they think that there's trouble on the horizon. But you and I all know that the Fed is a reactionary, they're not proactive, they're reactive. And so I'm sure they'll be behind. A year from now, they'll be talking about they should have been cutting rates in the spring. They should have been cutting rates in the summer. And maybe we don't get our first rate cut until after the election. You know, I had said, half jokingly last year, I said, I just don't think the Fed's going to do anything in front of the election. Now, Dad totally disagrees with me because he says, well, they got to get in there and help their boy Biden. But then he also said that time may have passed. Because we're just, it takes time for an interest rate cut to make it through, make it through the economy. And so we're only, seven months away from the election.
I mean, it's got to be June or July or both. That's it. Because I agree with you, Jeff, that's their deadline. If they don't have it by June or July, I agree with you. They can't do it in August because they don't have a meeting. They have the Jackson Hole Symposium. Could they speak more dovishly at Jackson Hole? Yes. But September, October, they definitely will not cut rates because that just will be a bad look. So then the next rate cut would be in November. I had a conversation with a client this past week of this exact topic.
I wonder, how is the Fed really feeling bad that long rates are coming up? Because we needed the long rates needed to come up in order to get rid of this. We still have
inversion.
Inverted yield curve, nobody's talking about because for the longest time an inverted yield curve was one of the ingredients of a coming recession, and I don't think there's anybody on the show today that thinks that we're anywhere near recessionary economic situation. And so the markets have digested this inverted yield curve that we've been in now. What, we're approaching 2 years?
2 years.
That we've had this inverted yield curve. So we're up 20 basis points this week on the 10-year Treasury. What does that mean? What does that mean for home buying situation, the lending situation when it comes to homes? Well, it makes it a little worse because mortgages, a lot of 30-year, 15-year mortgages are all predicated on whatever the 10-year Treasury is doing. So that's making that situation a little bit worse. But I keep hearing these stories about how supply is so low and this, that, and the other. But here I'm looking at a statistic here. This is from the Census Bureau talking about new home prices, and I'm not sure if y'all have heard this. After rallying 60% from April of 2020 through October of 2022, the median price of a new home in the U.S. has now fallen almost 20% from just under $500,000 down to $400,000 as of February. I haven't heard anybody in the media talking about that. And I can just tell you here locally in terms of existing homes in my particular neighborhood, there's certain price points that aren't moving at all, and we're seeing price cut after price cut after price cut, and there are more homes for sale in my particular neighborhood in Corpus than there have been in the 13 plus years that I've owned property out there. Never had this many homes for sale at the same time. What does that say? I don't get this. Obviously we're getting these nationwide statistics, and real estate is very local. But I can tell you here locally, I wonder if supply is really there's high supply in the high price homes, and maybe there's low supply in the low price home, and maybe that's what's happening here. I know we're coming up on the break, but with interest rates coming up, that's going to make the housing situation a little more difficult. And the market next week, we get some bad CPI numbers, we get some bad PPI numbers. We're going to be down 1,500 points in the Dow.
I've got a counter to your argument, by the way.
Okay.
Do we have enough time to get it in before the break?
No, we only got 30 seconds.
Okay, so Joe can't do the auctioneering right before the commercial break. All right, so Joe, we'll come back with you for that counterpoint to Jeff's last last comments. We'll do that after this. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Your Money Wise guys will be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the Money Wise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps, where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So if you're just tuning in, Jeff, you were talking about the housing market. Joe, I know you had a kind of counterpoint. And really, because we were talking about how interest rates have been coming up this past week, obviously caused some sell down in the market on Monday and Tuesday. And then, of course, Neil Kashkari's comment, which really drew the market down lower on Thursday. But what was your counterpoint to Jeff's comments about the housing market?
If you look at the housing market, and I think some probably mortgage brokers would argue this, and maybe some realtors, well, if you have a 20% drop in the average home price, and yeah, say rates stay where they are.
That was new home. That was median new home. That's not all homes.
Median new home. But what I'm getting at is median new home. But if you have a drop in the median new home price and rates stay where they are, there's going to be a little bit of an offset because you'd be paying less for a brand new home than you would even though rates are a little bit higher. Now, existing homes can start dropping, then I think you'll see some equilibrium there. That's all I was going to say.
Okay, and let me counterpoint your counterpoint. That time period that they're talking about, April 2020 through October 2022, what were mortgage rates in April of 2020?
Probably three.
Probably.
3 to 4?
Right. And what are they
four,
now?
Four and a quarter.
They're double.
Four and a quarter.
They're basically double that. So, yes, the price of the house has come down, but the interest rate has gone up. How much of that, you know, is the payment still about the same? Is it still as unaffordable now as it was back then? You know, that's the median price of a new home, $400,000. You have to make probably well into six figures to make that kind of money just to even qualify for a 30-year mortgage on a median priced new home.
Jeff, you're actually correct, because I did read an article several weeks ago that I think the income that you have to make to afford the average home is about $115,000. Mm-hmm. So that's – and it was the first – and it was I believe it was the first time where you had to earn at least six figures in this interest rate environment to be able to afford the cost of a median home. And I just read another
– I believe that is almost double the median – average household income in the United States.
Correct. Well, that's very, 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 very close. And we're just talking about median across the United States. I read an article this past week in California, the average home, $796,000, average home price in California. And we wonder why they're flooding the state of Texas and Florida. Well, politics and how the states run is one thing, but the cost of living is insane. Well, yeah, Joe.
I'm looking at a MFS piece that I got to Jeff, and it just says price rally for home buyers, but it doesn't state new homes or existing homes. So it is 497, and I can't read it because my eyes are bad. And then it says 400,000 in the same time period, and I can't read the little bitty blue number. So it might be my bad, and I will.
Sounds like someone needs to get some readers.
I usually have them at my desk, and I don't. So I might be wrong on that, but I'm looking at a very similar statistic.
Well, that's where I got the statistic. So they're just talking about, you know, the median price of a new home has fallen 20%, but what the statistic doesn't say is, but interest rates are double,
maybe close to double what it was in 2020.
Double what they were. So yeah, it's nice that the price has fallen, but now the amount of money it costs for you to buy the house does it make it that much more affordable? And what I'm seeing here locally, on the more expensive homes is I'm seeing more and more, you know, multiple price decreases and more time on the market. There's a house in my neighborhood that's been on the market now almost an entire year looking for a buyer. And there are others that are approaching 6 months on the market. And that was really unheard of 2 years ago. When we had, mm-hmm. when we had 3% interest rates, that was, I mean, unless the house was in horrible shape or had other issues, that was really unheard of. Yeah, Kyle.
And let's also keep in mind, if you're talking about a jumbo mortgage, the rates are going to be even higher than a 30-year conventional. And we've talked about this on past shows. You know, the National Association of Realtors, their head economist, said that he felt that the 6% mortgage was kind of the magic percentage to really start unlocking a lot of inventory and supply and creating more of an equilibrium of buyers and sellers, even at 6%. I think we could start seeing it happen at 6.25%, but we got to get there. And right now, especially with what rates did this past week and seeing bonds selling off and their rates going higher, and now this talk
and
of the Fed
reacting and the market.
Reacting.
We've got basically a 2% quote unquote correction.
And really, the Dow.
Yeah, well, in the Dow.
That's like a mini correction.
It's a mini correction. 1% in the S&P and less than 1% in the NASDAQ. Yeah, not any big deal. But you get some more fuel to the fire next week with some unexpectedly strong CPI or PPI numbers. That fire may burn a little brighter. What does this mean for the portfolio? Because what's the bottom line in terms of asset allocation decision making? Is it a good time to buy? Is it not a good time to buy? You know, what should you be doing with the portfolio? Well, we're constantly reassessing everything that we own, you know, daily, weekly basis. And we've got some things on the sell list that they want to get crazy. We've even talked about buying some more bonds in here because interest rates have come up in the, you know, the, you know, like we were talking about some 2-year paper, you know, it's getting, you know, up over, you know, 4.6-4.7% yields. We haven't pulled the trigger on it, yet, but, if the, you know, if the 10-year continues to march up, well, we know what happened last year when the 10-year started marching up to 5%. All we got to do is go back and look at late summer into the third quarter, and we saw exactly what, you know, that's the kind of reaction you can expect from the market. If this continues, and if you get those hotter numbers and you get some more hawkish Fed speak, the market's going to start paying attention. Now, yes, we're right on the cusp of earnings season. We're not going to get much next week. I know the banks, we have some of the banks coming out, but I don't think anybody late in the week on the banks. It's the weeks following when we start, you know, getting a much fuller view of what's happening earnings wise. And there's going to be, you know, companies that are going to miss are going to get whacked, and they're going to get whacked high single digits, low double digits. That's where I feel like the market is right now. And if one of these big high flyers, you know, an Nvidia or one of these other stocks,
Microsoft, Google,
Facebook,
Google,
Alphabet,
Bookface, as you like to call it.
Tesla's in the barrel right now. So.
Tesla's out.
Yeah, that's due to, you know, the first time they missed, I think, expectations on delivery. So I think they're saying Elon needs to kind of come back away from X and SpaceX and some of these other companies he has and spend a little bit more time at Tesla, which I can understand with his disappointing deliveries.
Or as Dad said earlier this week when I was talking, Tesla may be coming back to be valued like a real car company.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, so Ford actually outperformed Tesla on Friday, so, you know.
Well, talking about the portfolio again, I mean, this is, again, where active management and vigilance is going to be key. And, Jeff, you were alluding to last summer. We had a 3 month slog to equal a right around a 10% corrective move, but it took 3 months of down months for that to develop. It wasn't a sharp and quick 10% correction. It was a slow, it was like the blob, like that old horror movie, black and white horror movie. It was like the blob just oozing down to that 10% corrective move. And then when Chairman Powell came into the room and opened the box of doves, that's when the Santa Claus rally late October took off.
Well, if you remember, I think the market was doing this. 10-year Treasury yield was up, market was down. 10-year Treasury yield was down, market was up.
We were in that zone
there for those 3 months. Are we staring down the same situation potentially? We got to see the data. You know, we're data dependent just like everybody else, but we're ready to take some action if this starts to develop into something, because a 10% correction any given year is a normal year
thing. Yeah, it's
that
normal.
So this is as good a reason as any if this pans out that we start to see the 10-year Treasury marching even higher, that the stock market side is going to react. Now, which stocks are going to get hit the worst? You know, I would say probably the ones that have the highest flyers are going to be the ones that get hit the worst.
Yeah, but see, in that situation, Jeff, we'll take advantage of both. We'll take advantage of the higher rates on the bond side, and we're going to take advantage of the higher rates on the stock side to use that pullback to do our rebalance and make adjustments to the portfolio for a higher allocation to stocks for the future. So with that, let's take another commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Your Money Wise guys will be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps, where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So in our last segment of the first hour of this weekend's MoneyWise program, so in this last segment, because we've been talking about, we've got very important economic data coming out next week. You got the consumer price index, the CPI, the PPI, definitely market moving events. So as we say, you have to remain vigilant. You have to stay actively managed, and you can't just be in a passive strategy when you have markets that move like this and as much algorithmic trading that's out there. We saw what happened on Thursday this past week, where words have consequences and how the algorithms can take the market down very quickly as it can take it up. But this is why active management is so key. And so, you know, as we were talking earlier in the show, you know, the 10% corrective move in a market in any given market year is normal. It doesn't feel good and it's not fun, but it happens. And we're definitely long overdue for that. And we're waiting for that opportunity to rebalance our portfolios at Davidson Capital. So definitely stay vigilant in your portfolios. And if you don't know what you own, this is when you need to get a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys. But Joe, I know, just to shift gears, I know that you came across some statistics.
Sure.
Once again,
as our listeners know, I am not always a statistical source on the show, but every week we get this it's called News of the Week or Beyond the News from MFS, which is a mutual fund company. But one of the statistics they had, and we're talking about the S&P 500, and it's titled Another 1% Mark. And March was the fifth straight month that the S&P had rallied 1% or more in a calendar month. And there had been 12 prior 5 month streaks of 1% monthly gains since World War II. And the S&P has been higher a year later all 12 times for a median gain of 9.7%. So that's a good solid number to get behind. But Kyle and I were talking about during the break, like, well, you throw that in there with election year. And remember, I'm just saying this because I know we're going to get some questions. I know what people are thinking. In election year, is it last 50 years? The market going back
since 1956, in presidential election years, the market has an average return of just over 12%, 12.4%, if memory serves me correct. And then you just read that statistic that there's been 12 instances since World War II where the market has been positive 1% or more 5 months in a row. And when that's occurred, the market has been positive 12 months later every single time. And correct. So that again bodes well for an up market year. I think all three of us at the beginning of the year predicted the market to be higher, some with a higher return than others, but we all predicted that the market would be positive for this year. And so, Joe,
Jeff had kind of a good stat because we're probably already there. The S&P's right at 9%. So we could have a flat market the rest of the year, but I think there's some room for still.
I think there's definitely room. Yeah, I definitely think there's room to rally because here's the other thing, Joe. And I know that we've talked about this term in the past. They talk about it in the financial entertainment press, and it's called the Fed put. And what that means is the Fed kind of creating a floor underneath the market. And because we had the Fed do all the interest rate increases in 2022 into 2023, they have now tools to create that Fed put, that kind of barrier underneath the market where they can come in and cut interest rates if the economy falls off the table. Or even if not that they would cut rates if the market falls off the table, but they definitely have tools to help the economy, which in turn will help the stock market if it comes to pass. That is the Fed put. And it's not just cutting interest rates. It's also lowering the level of quantitative tightening, which we talked on last weekend show that they've already started to dial back from $95 billion a month of bond runoff. They're lowering it. Did they lower it to $60 billion? I didn't know the exact number, but they definitely decreased it. So they have a couple of tools. So I guess what I'm trying to say for all of our listeners, all of our home gamers, is that we all believe that we're going to have an up year. How high up we're going to be, you know, it's really anybody's guess. But from a statistical standpoint, we have very positive statistics for the stock market this year. But again, it's not going to occur in a straight line. And we're overdue for a corrective move. And every conversation I'm having with clients, I'm letting them know that to prepare yourself mentally and emotionally. And as we said, a 10% corrective move in any given market year is normal.
Well, S&P has already exceeded what I thought it would be for the year. I'd have to go back and look at exactly what I said. Given that, then I'm not expecting a whole lot for the rest of the year. It's going to be more like pushing against a string. Interest rates rising on the long end is going to be a problem for stocks. And sticky inflation, quote unquote, sticky inflation, which is what these statistics here of the last 2 months have been described as. If we get another sticky number, I just don't think that's going to bode well for getting another 9 or 10% up quarter like we had in the first quarter in the second. That just isn't going to happen. And we're going to give some of this back. We may give some of it back rather quickly. Corrections can sometimes be sharp and short in a bull market. But again, it does create opportunities. But you know, the market was really primed this year for a whole lot of rate increases, and all we've been hearing
decreases.
All we've been hearing as the weeks and months have rolled by is that those expectations have been getting whittled
smaller.
down and whittled down. So I think vigilance is the key here. Better not get too far out on your skis. Better not be 70, 80% invested in stocks at this juncture. I don't think that's the place to be. So I'm not overly uncomfortable where we're basically 60-40 right now in the portfolios.
To clarify, yeah, you're talking about a moderate portfolio. If you're aggressive, 70, 80, okay, there you go. Clarify.
Yeah, 70, well, yeah, and aggressive, I get that. But for the average investor, the average pre-retiree, you know, we're talking about a few years away from retirement or already in retirement.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, already, you know, any over 60% allocation to stocks, you really better be vigilant in this kind of environment.
And I will say this before we break for the top of the hour. I've been doing a lot of portfolio reviews here recently where allocations are woefully, they're so bad. They're woefully inappropriate for the age of the client and where they are in their stage of post-retirement to have this level of allocation to stocks. So that's why portfolio review and analysis is so absolutely critical. Well, with that, we're coming up to the top of the hour break, so we'll take the break, go into the news. When we come back, we'll be diving into the second hour of this weekend's Money Wise program and continuing with investor education. So stay tuned, and we'll do that after this. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. You Money Wise guys, we'll be back after the news.
All opinions expressed by Davidson Capital Management on MoneyWise are solely theirs and are based upon information they consider reliable and is subject to change without notice. You should be aware of the risk in investing in any security or investment strategy discussed on the show. Before acting, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and should seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Got my father, John, my brother, Jeff. I'm your host, Kyle Davidson, and we are heading into the second hour of this weekend's Money Wise program. Now, if you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation, you can reach us in our Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com.
If you missed the first hour of MoneyWise, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Click on the radio show link where you can listen to today's show as well as past MoneyWise programs. You can also subscribe to our iTunes feed by clicking on the blue note in the upper right-hand corner of our homepage at davidsoncap.com.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Well, now, as we utilize every second hour of the MoneyWise program going into investor education, and wanted to go into a topic that we haven't talked about in quite some time, it seems that a lot of our educational segments, we talk to our listeners about the accumulation and the saving side of retirement and getting to that retirement red zone, but we seldom discuss what happens once you're in retirement, and really more importantly and more focused on how do you spend in retirement and the appropriate level of spending in retirement to make sure that your retirement nest egg lasts a lifetime. And there was an article, Dad, that you found from MarketWatch in the Wall Street Journal, and it really spurred us into saying to ourselves, you know what, we need to talk about this because I don't think we've covered it enough on this program. I think some of our listeners are currently in retirement or right on the verge of going into retirement, and that would be a very solid topic to go into so our listeners can start doing their own planning. And what I call it when I work with our clients or prospective clients, I call it financial road mapping. That's just the name I've given it myself as far as what we do for our current clients, for prospective clients as they're transitioning into retirement, just to give them an idea of this is your nest egg. This is what you're projected to need to take out on a monthly basis and on an annual basis. And this is what can happen to your assets as you go through retirement. But there was a survey that was done in this article, and the title of the article is The Surprising Amount Retirees Spend. And this article really kind of goes in two different directions. It goes into the direction of retirees not really spending hardly anything of their retirement nest egg because they're terrified to spend a single dollar.
They're concerned about outliving their money.
They're concerned about that. But then there's the other side of the coin of retirees going, I don't want to use the word nuts, but spending a little bit more than they should and actually upsizing. And because, again, looking at a sizable amount of assets, let's say you retire you've accumulated $1.5 million, $2 million, that it gives them a sense of security that, hey, I can go from a 1,000-square-foot house, I want to build me a new 3,500-square-foot house in retirement because I have all of these assets, and not realizing what kind of significant impact that can make on their nest egg. And so there was a survey done back in February, and they found that not only are some retirees not downsizing, but 30% of these retirees that they surveyed have actually upsized their lifestyle and have upsized upsized their homes and their lifestyle. I was quite surprised seeing a 30% increase. Now, granted, this is their sample size. It's not a huge sample size. But, again, it's an interesting statistic that 30% of these retirees were upsizing as they moved into retirement. And I know that if any of our listeners went to a financial planner, went to a financial salesman and said, okay, here's my nest egg. I want to start drawing assets off of it to live in retirement. How much should I be pulling out? And it seems that the rule of thumb in the brokerage community and the financial planning community has always been a 4% rule, to be not taking out more than 4% of the total value of your portfolio on an annual basis. Now, at Davidson Capital Management, being that we're in our 26th year of business, we have a little bit different experience because we have proof of our management philosophy and how it is performed in good markets, bad markets, higher interest rate environments, and of course, the horribly low interest rate environment we're currently in. And we have found that, you know, our clients have been able to average between a 6 and 7% withdrawal rate on an annual basis and not encroach on their principal assets that they invested with us over the lifetime of the account. And we utilize client number one that's been with us 26 plus years and what they've been able to withdraw from their account and have not only taken out more than they originally invested with us, but actually have more in their account than what they originally invested with us. So we know that our philosophy works because we have proof. We have the numbers to prove it. But that 4% rule has been used by the financial service industry for many, many years. But now, because of the extremely low interest rate environment, some folks in the financial service industry are now changing that withdrawal rate to between 2 and 3%.
I mean, that's insane, really.
That is low.
Well, in our opinion, the way we viewed the 4% rule, as you talked about, Kyle, being used by our competitors and on Wall Street, we've kind of looked at it as they're trying to keep the bar as low for themselves as possible. That way they can charge higher fees, sell their products that have loads, sales charges attached to them, and still meet their 4% maximum rate of withdrawal target that they tell their clients that they want, what they want their clients to stick to. So by taking it down to 2 or 3% maximum withdrawal rate per year, that's lowering the bar even more than what we thought was a low bar to begin with.
With a 4% rule.
Right. So if you got a client that's got $1 million, and you're telling, well, you can only withdraw 2% a year. That's $20,000.
Well, think about this. I mean, if you put it into government bonds, 10-year bonds right now,
exactly.
You don't need any of this. You can get right at 2%.
Exactly.
So you don't need to go to Wall Street to get a 2% withdrawal rate. I mean, you can do that on your own, dealing direct with the Federal Reserve. So that's absurd. That's why I said that's insane. That's insane.
Well, they're trying to cost themselves all the trailing commissions that Dad, you and I talked about on last weekend's show. They're trying to cost themselves a lot of commissions because, like you said, you can go directly to the Treasury and buy government bonds, which is a guaranteed rate of return, the only guaranteed rate of return on Wall Street, to generate that withdrawal rate of 2 to 1%.
Whether it's 2, 3, or 4%, in my opinion, this looks like a revenue enhancement to policy by Wall Street.
Okay, well, let's take another commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Your Money Wise guys will be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation, you can reach us in our Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you have an investment-related question or topic you'd like for us to discuss here on the Money Wise program, you can send all your emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So continuing our investor education, and it comes from an article, The Surprising Amount Retirees Spend, and we're talking about spending in retirement and some of the rules of thumb that we utilize with our clients at Davidson Capital Management, but also just some tips for pre-retirees so they can do a quick determination with very simple calculations of whether or not they're potentially ready for retirement and kind of hop on that proverbial horse and riding off into the sunset, and some things that they can do and utilize some free calculators that are online for them to do some of their at-home calculations. Now, getting back to this article, there's a financial research firm. I love the name of it. It's called Hearts and Wallets. This research firm, they surveyed a little bit over 1,200 households age 65 and older that had assets of more than $100,000. And the researchers found that only 12%, or I shouldn't say only, they found out that 12% took out over twice the 4% rule, closer to a 9% withdrawal rate per year. But they also found that 28% withdrew less than 1%. And some of these folks surveyed didn't remove any assets at all from their retirement assets. Now, I would be assuming that these folks either have A, taxable assets and outside accounts, because most likely they would be asking if it's IRAs or pensions or what have you, or they have traditional defined benefit plans and getting their pension payment. They decided not to take the cash lump sum option, which is what we recommend to any retiree at Davidson Capital Management, to take that lump sum distribution from your pension so you gain control of those assets. Or their lifestyle is so modest that their Social Security payments are more than covering their daily living expenses. I mean, that's the only thing I was able to take away from this survey of over 1,200 households that were surveyed. But, you know, one thing that was interesting that came out of this article that really spurred us to want to talk about this is this mentality of chunks or nothing. And that means retirees going into their IRA accounts, going into their retirement accounts, and taking a chunk of money out at a particular period of time, as opposed to spreading those payments out over a monthly basis. And I wanted to talk about this because, being in business 26 years, we deal with this on a weekly basis at Davidson Capital Management, where, you know, we recommend that if you're going to be living off of your assets in retirement, to set up really kind of your own annuity. And I hate to even use the word annuity, but I have to let all of our listeners know the definition of the word annuity means a periodic stream of payments. That's what annuity means. Well, you can create your own annuity through an IRA without actually having to go and buy an annuity, and you do that by setting up a particular dollar amount that you're going to be withdrawing on a monthly basis from your retirement nest egg to live off of in retirement. And this is what we would recommend at Davidson Capital Management, as opposed to taking chunks out. And the reason why we recommend not taking chunks of assets out are for a couple of reasons. First off, when you say, okay, I need $15,000 out of my account, and then 4 or 5 months later, I need $20,000 out of my account, and then a couple months later, you take another $10,000 out, you get to the end of the year, you kind of forget the chunks of assets you took out earlier in the year. And so when you add up the total amount of withdrawals that you took, a lot of times you'll find out that you were violating, again, at our firm, the 6-7% withdrawal rate rule, where you're part of this group that's taking out 9, 10, 11% of your investable net worth by taking it in chunks. But the other reason why we don't recommend doing this is you save for retirement typically through dollar cost averaging. If you're participating in a 401k, you're dollar cost averaging into the market. It's also wise to dollar cost average out of the market, because if you time the withdrawal of a big chunk of assets at the wrong time, it could wind up costing you at the end of the year when it comes down to your total performance return and growth of those assets. And an example that I like to use is, think of your retirement nest egg like a golden goose. And that golden goose produces golden eggs, and those golden eggs are capital appreciation, dividend income, interest income. You want to keep that golden goose as large as possible, as long as possible, to create the biggest golden eggs it possibly can. But if you're going in and taking large chunks of that golden goose out, then you start, of course, leaking into the issue of the law of large numbers, meaning you want to keep your number, your retirement nest egg, as big as possible, as long as possible. So instead of taking $10,000 out, let's say you have to take $50,000 out a year. You know, why don't you take $4,000 out a month as opposed to taking $15,000 out every quarter? You know, doing it that way. So bottom line is our recommendation is to dollar cost average assets out of your retirement nest egg as opposed to taking chunks at one time.
The other thing we run into is that we'll see situations where clients don't give us the heads up when they're getting ready to need a chunk withdrawal, and it really affects what a manager is doing with the money if he's not told. It's, if you know money's coming out every month, you can also plan as a portfolio manager. Mm-hmm. When you do the chunk withdrawals,
it can force sales that you don't want to make,
and it may not come at the right time.
That's right.
I mean, you're affecting the return in your portfolio based on that chunk. Now, if you're fortunate enough to have taken a chunk out in early March of 2000, that would have been a whole lot better than taking a chunk out in October of 2000.
But it averages out. That's true, but it averages out over the life of the account.
But if it's a large enough chunk, you start – I mean, when we know you start taking out more than 7% a year –
you run the risk.
You're going to be running out of money. I mean, depending on how many years this goes on. I mean, we know this. I mean, it's not something we have to study. 25 years plus seeing this, and we've had some wild and woolly markets since 1989, and we're going to have wild and woolly markets for the next 25 years. And so you start doing that, and you are going to run out of money. And I would say, and Jeff and I have been here long enough, we have seen people run through retirement accounts in a very short period of time, run through inheritances. It happens time and time again. And we will counsel these people and explain to them what's going to happen. But it seems like once it starts, they can't seem to stop it.
Yeah. It's like hitting an artery that you can't stop the bleeding.
And it isn't, I mean, it's their money. We are there to work for them, but we're also there to counsel, and we will tell, you know, you are going to see this money disappear.
A lot of the time when we see people taking chunks out of their retirement accounts, they are more times than not purchases that they shouldn't be making. I've had to advise many times for folks, they want to pay off their mortgage. The first thing that happens is they retire and they have a seven-figure retirement, and the very first thing they want to do is they want to get totally debt-free, and they want to pay off their house, they want to pay off their cars, they want to pay off their credit cards. You know, some of these things we should have been planned ahead of time to have them paid off before you reach retirement, maybe not necessarily the house. But by taking all these chunks now and converting them to assets that are appreciating at a lower rate or appreciating at no rate, you know, or depreciating, like, you know, paying
like
off
a
car
or like a vehicle,
that's a real problem. We've also had to counsel folks many times that are, and I'm going to use the term quote unquote retiring, because they're not actually retiring, they're changing careers. And they go in and raid their retirement nest eggs in order to change careers. And I've had several situations where clients would take out 50 or 60% of their money or more to start a new business, change careers, and the problem that we have as long-term planners of retirement nest eggs is that, is this new endeavor going to replace this money that you're taking out in a short period of time? If you change careers at 50 years old, you know, and you're 10, 12 years away from retirement, and you take $1 million portfolio down to $500,000, are you going to be able to replace that $500,000 in 10 years in this new endeavor to restore your retirement back to where it was before? That's a question that I've had to pose to several people who did end up taking all the money, and in several cases we've had one that completely went through their entire retirement nest egg in this new business endeavor, and that's not a good thing.
We wouldn't recommend funding a new business endeavor with your retirement nest egg.
No.
You should go out and find other forms of financing, and if you can't get it, maybe you shouldn't be going into that business venture. Well, we're coming to the bottom of the hour break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. We'll be back after these words. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation, you can reach us in our Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So continuing our education about retirement spending, and really this whole conversation spurred by an article titled "The Surprising Amount Retirees Spend." We've only got into a little bit of the article because we deal with this on a weekly basis at Davidson Capital Management, so we're really discussing our own personal experiences with our client base and just rules of thumb that we use as an investment advisor. And also just some tips for our listeners to utilize in getting prepared for retirement and to make sure that you don't outlive your assets. And one thing, Jeff, you were talking about folks going into retirement wanting to pay off their cars, wanting to pay off their credit cards, wanting to pay off their house because they don't want to have any bills coming in.
Right. And I think the key there is that the retirement planning process shouldn't begin the year before you're going to retire. The retirement planning process should be starting many years, 3 years before. So that you, if 3 years before you're planning on retiring, you have these credit cards and this car payment and this house payment, then the planning should start 3 years before. Well, we need to get the credit cards paid off. Because they're typically at much higher interest rates. The cars, well, that's what are the rates the cars are at?
That's right.
If you bought them here recently, their interest rates should be pretty low and probably wouldn't be advisable to pay them off with retirement assets, if their interest rates are really low.
But because one thing that retirees forget is as you pull assets out of the IRA, they're fully taxable as ordinary income. So now you're paying taxes on this withdrawal to pay off this vehicle or to buy whatever. So it's nice that you're paying it off, but you're having to pay taxes on that withdrawal. And the thing that we discuss here in the office is, well, look at the interest rate. Because we get it. We understand folks don't like to pay bills. No one likes to pay bills. They don't want to make that car payment on a monthly basis. They don't want to make that mortgage payment on a monthly basis. We get it. But you have to take a look at, what is my interest rate? What am I paying? If I have a car note at, say, 2.5%, you want to continue to finance that. I know Jeff and I get this question all the time. Should I be paying cash for a new vehicle? Well, what's the interest rate? Well, it's 3.5%. No, don't pay cash for it. Because just utilizing our asset builder, our moderate allocation, our asset builder, our goal return for that account over the lifetime of that account is 7%. So I use 7% as the rule of thumb. If the interest rate is below 7%, you finance it. If the interest rate is above 7%, okay, we could discuss paying cash for it. Because again, you want to keep that golden goose as large as possible, as long as possible, to take advantage of compound interest and the law of large numbers.
The other thing about removing money from your retirement nest egg, especially if it's an IRA, to pay off bills, is that the income taxes you have to pay.
That's right. And if you don't have cash available to pay those income taxes, where do you have to raid again to pay for those income taxes? So, your IRA again, so it's an ongoing cycle.
So if you take, say, a $20,000 car loan at 3%, and you take that $20,000 out of your retirement nest egg, you're giving up $20,000 that, under our philosophy, over the long term, might earn an estimated 7% to pay off a 3% loan. So that's 4% on $20,000. You know, 4% on $20,000, I believe, is $800, if my math is correct.
Per year.
Per year, exactly. And then on top of that, let's say you're in a 15% tax bracket, and you take that $20,000 out. Well, now you're looking at, what was that, $3,000 in income taxes that you're going to have to pay pulling that money out. So you're giving up $800 a year in additional income compounded and a $3,000 tax bill in a 15% tax bracket just to pay off a $20,000 car loan at 3%. Well, imagine how that works out if you want to expand it out to paying off a house.
It can cost a lot.
A couple of $100,000 house and at a 4% interest rate. You know, that those run into some really big numbers. I mean, the taxes alone. You know, if it was $200,000, you get hit with a 20%+ tax bill. That's $40,000 in taxes.
Now, talking about vehicle purchases or talking about homes, like you were talking about earlier, Jeff, if you have several credit cards all carrying balances at a high interest rate, you really need to get those paid off before you even contemplate going into retirement. I mean, you really need to have consumer debt from the credit card standpoint, that financial house in order before you go into retirement. As I say to prospective clients or current clients, if you have a car note at a low interest rate, that's fine going into retirement. You have a mortgage payment at a low interest rate going into retirement, that's fine. But any consumer debt, you really want to have that paid off before you go into retirement, because of all the reasons we were just explaining. You don't want to retire and have to pull out $75,000 to pay off credit card debt, because now, here you go again, you're having to pay tax on that distribution to pay these credit cards off. So if you find yourself thinking about retirement and you're sitting on $20,000, $25,000 in credit card debt, you need to focus on paying off that debt first so you don't find yourself in a situation where you go and you retire and now you're having to pull out 8, 9, 10% a year out of your retirement nest egg to keep up with all of these bills. But how do you figure out how much do I need in retirement? Now, I will tell you this. If we all knew when the last day on earth was going to be for each and every one of us, boy, retirement planning would be so simple. It'd be so easy. But unfortunately, no one knows when their last day on earth is going to be. So you always have to prepare, the oldest saying in the book, prepare for a rainy day. So what you need to do, and what we recommend, is if you want to maintain your lifestyle, as I say to prospective clients, if you're used to eating steak 3 times a week, don't think that once you go into retirement you're going to be eating PB&J and rice and beans 3 times a week instead of steak. So we recommend to take 12 months of your spending and average them out. Add up 12 months, and if you don't keep good records and you're thinking about retirement, you need to start keeping a record every month of what you're spending for your cell phone, your electricity, your water, your entertainment, food, all of your expenses. You add up 12 months, divided by 12, you get your average. And once you have that average, you multiply by 12 again. That is your withdrawal rate per year that you need to take out in order to maintain that lifestyle. Now, if that dollar amount divided by how much you've saved is greater, that withdrawal rate is greater than, say, 7%, then you need to either A, lower your living expenses somehow, or B, you need to work longer and you need to save more. And again, there's financial calculators. There's a website called financialcalculators.com. I absolutely love this website. You can utilize it for free. It has so many calculators and so many different consumer finance and retirement planning arenas. It will blow your mind. And it's a website that I use very, very often. In fact, I used it today. So utilize financialcalculators.com, but you need to sit down and do this work. Don't just go into retirement blindly and figure out what you're going to need to be spending on a monthly basis. And that's what we would recommend, is taking monthly withdrawals, not chunks. You have to get out of the chunk mentality. And we understand emergencies arise where you do have to tap in more than what you are taking out on a monthly basis. We get that. But don't make it a habit.
I was going to say the key to managing retirement assets to me comes down to one word: flexibility.
Absolutely.
And flexibility means that your retirement assets are not invested in instruments that
take that away.
Yeah, that reduce your ability to withdraw if an unforeseen event happens. And I'm kind of laying this at the feet of non-publicly traded REITs or private placements or annuities of all different kinds.
Or even taking a defined benefit payment from a traditional pension. That would be something else.
Right.
Taking a traditional pension.
Yeah, instead of taking the lump sum, you just go on and say, I'm going to take the pension, and that's it. Because once you lock yourself in to taking that pension payment,
you're done.
That's it. You're only getting that amount of money for the rest of your life, and your spouse's life. And then once those two once if you choose the particular option where you get a pension payment for your lifetime and your wife gets a pension payment for her lifetime, there's no other assets going to the estate.
And those payments are not adjusted for inflation. So every month that goes by, that pension payment is buying less.
And they're also not guaranteed.
That's right. No matter how strong the corporation is, and I know the refinery businesses here in the Corpus Christi area are very good at taking care of their employees. I mean, we've seen it firsthand. But there are no guarantees in life. And when you have your pension and you're taking those pension payments, and if that pension goes insolvent, very bad things can happen. And we'll talk about that when we come back from our last commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. We'll be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation, you can reach us in our Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So in our last segment of this weekend's MoneyWise program, before we went to break, Jeff was talking about maintaining flexibility in retirement. And I was talking about taking pension payments. And we were talking about solvency of pensions. The one thing that each and every one of our listeners needs to understand is that there is no such thing as a guaranteed pension from any corporation. I mean, corporations have gone out of business all the time. I mean, I think of WorldCom. I think of Enron. There's other corporations that have gone out of business. A lot of companies in the airline industry have gone out of business. The reason why we recommend taking a lump sum distribution, if it's available in your pension, or if you're lucky enough to still have a defined benefit or pension plan from your employer, the reason why we recommend to take that cash lump sum payout is to be able to maintain that flexibility in retirement and not rely on your former employer to be making those monthly payments to you, because you have to understand those monthly pension payments are not hedged are not adjusted for monetary inflation. So what buys you in 2015 is going to buy you a heck of a lot less the payment, the same payment you're getting in 2020 or in 2030. So that's the reason why you want to take that lump sum to have that flexibility and also to have access to those assets in case you do run into an emergency or want to be spending a little bit more that you can afford to spend a little bit more than what your pension payment you're receiving is going to amount to. But the other reason is that if a pension goes insolvent, it gets turned over to the PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And the thing you have to understand is the PBGC has multi-billion dollars of unfunded pension liabilities, and they have a cap set on the maximum amount a pension recipient can receive on a monthly basis. And so if you were lucky enough to be receiving a very sizable, say, a $4,000 or $5,000 a month pension payment, well, last I checked, which is it's been a while since I've checked, but if memory serves me correct, the PBGC's maximum monthly payout is less than $3,000 a month. So if you're receiving a $4,000 or $5,000 monthly pension payment and the pension gets turned over to the PBGC,
you just sliced
your
pension payment. Regardless of how much you're receiving a month, you're going to get less.
Yeah, you're going to get less. That's right. And something else that we've talked about on past shows, some horror stories concerning these pension payouts, and I've read this right out of the Wall Street Journal, is the actuarial firms crunching the numbers have run into situations where they find out that a pension has been overpaying pension recipients for years and years and years, and one day a pension recipient goes to the mailbox, receives a letter stating, oh, we've overpaid you over the last 10 years, $150,000. You need to pay that back to us immediately, or we're going to cut your pension benefit in half until we recoup that overpayment.
It's rare.
It's rare.
It's very rare.
But it happens.
Yeah, right. One thing that struck me was this that was on page 2 of the
Going back to the article, and the article titled, let me get back to the title, The Surprising Amount Retirees Spend, the roadmap for policymakers and Americans' view of the retirement crisis from the National Institute of Retirement Security found that in a survey of 801 Americans, 67% said that they'd be willing to take less in salary increases
today
in exchange for guaranteed income in retirement. And again, this is laid right to the feet of this pension benefit, the secure feeling you get from receiving that monthly check from a pension or from an annuity, and unfortunately these payments are not adjusted for monetary inflation. And we constantly talk about monetary inflation on the Money Wise program because not enough folks in the financial service industry are talking about it. Monetary inflation is the silent killer to the value of your retirement nest egg.
Well, what I see here, when I see people wanting to take less salary today for this guaranteed amount of money,
quote unquote guaranteed,
in the future, and the one thing you don't want to do is whatever that payment you're getting at age 65 or 66, you're not going to like it at age 78, 79. I will guarantee you that.
Oh, you're using the G.
Yeah, that's the guarantee. The guarantee is
you're not going to like it.
You're not going to like that amount of money 10 years down the road. The one thing, I'm only 70. I'm not retired, but the one thing that Jeff said that is the most important word is that flexibility. You cannot give up flexibility. And here's people saying, oh, if you just pay me less money today,
I'm willing to give up flexibility.
No. I mean, this
but that's fear talking, Dad. See, right. That's the thing. This is fear. These 67% of these 801 people surveyed, this is fear.
This is the 67% that the annuity community focuses on.
That's right. These are the fearful people that we've talked about last year on a show, the Dalbar study of overly emotional investors constantly remembering their losses and their failures and not remembering their victories. And because of the 24-hour news cycle, because of the volatility that's here to stay on Wall Street, it's never going away. And I don't think it's ever going to get any better.
You know what I would like to do if I was retiring, if I thought in terms of guaranteed? Create a laddered government bond portfolio, knowing that interest rates are going up in the future and that guaranteed amount is going to be going up in the future.
And guaranteed by the federal government.
Instead of taking salary increases in exchange for a guaranteed income in retirement, how about they keep the same salary but contribute more to their 401ks and build up their 401k nest eggs and stop being so fearful about day-to-day movements in the stock markets or what this pundit is saying and that pundit is saying, and just pay yourself more in accumulating retirement assets now, because accepting a lower salary for in exchange for a guaranteed income in retirement, that's baloney. This guaranteed income in retirement is not going to be enough to fund a comfortable retirement for most people. It's just not.
So
pay yourself first now with your increased salary by contributing more to your 401ks, and have some money in stocks and have some money in bonds and have some money in cash, but don't have it all in bonds and cash, because you're never going to beat monetary inflation over the long term if you're not willing to take a little bit of risk now.
And if any of our listeners would like to have a deeper powwow concerning their particular financial situation, you can reach us in our office on Monday at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And with that, from my father John and my brother Jeff, this is Kyle Davidson saying have a fantastic weekend into your financial health. We will talk to you next week.